You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Well, hello and welcome to Uncorking a Story. I'm your host, Mike Carlin, and today's guest is Heather Frimmer. Heather is a radiologist specializing in breast and emergency room imaging. Her first novel, Bedside Manners, was published in 2018 and has received several awards, including National Indie Excellence, Reader's Favorite, and Independent Press Awards. She completed her medical training at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York, New York Presbyterian Cornell, and Yale New Haven Hospital, where I've been to many times, and we can talk about that later. She lives with her husband and two children in suburban Connecticut. Her second novel, Better to Trust, releases September 21st, 2021. That is tomorrow. Wow, that's a big day for you, Heather.
Yes.
So welcome to the program, Heather. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great.
Well, you know, I always like to say that this is about uncorking the stories behind the story. So I'm curious, Heather, where does your story begin? Where does your personal story begin?
Mm-hmm. So I finished radiology residency in 2005, and I started working as a radiologist. I love the job. I find it interesting and exciting and fulfilling. And I worked for over 10 years. And at that point, I started feeling a little bit of a void, like a lack of a creative outlet in my job. And as much as I love it and I really still enjoy it, I felt like I needed something more creative to add to my life. So I decided to take a writing workshop class, an introductory writing class, at Westport Writers Workshop, which is, you know, close to my home. And it was totally on a whim. I didn't expect anything to come of it. But at the end of the class, my instructor, who I'd really formed a bond with, said to me, you know, I think you have a novel in you. I really think you could do that. And I looked at her and I said, you're insane. There's no way. I have two kids. I have a full-time job. You know, I kept listing other things. And she said, no, I really think you could do it. And I came home and I thought about it. I talked to my husband. I thought about it some more. And I decided that if other people could write a novel, why couldn't I write a novel? And also, I'm very type A. So if someone says I can do something, I'm not usually one to say no.
There you go. Well, did you have a sense, you know, in your past? I mean, can you look like to part of your childhood and say, you know what, it actually makes sense that I'm interested in writing because of, well, whatever. But when you were a kid, did you have a sense that you had that kind of creativity in you?
Well, I've always been a bookworm. I mean, since I was very little, I read early and then I read a lot all the time. I always had a book and I just love stories. And then I did start writing short stories more toward like high school. I started writing short stories, but I never did anything with them. It was sort of just for fun. And then in college, I actually minored in English. So I've always loved reading and writing. And, you know, when I went the medical route, that sort of fell by the wayside for a little bit because medical training is so intense and, you know, time intensive. But then I think I kind of came full circle and came back to it eventually.
You know, it's interesting. I've probably done about 90 of these interviews with authors, and one of the, you know, sort of the connective tissue that kind of, you know, connects them together is being a bookworm and like just having a natural interest in reading. Yeah. It's almost like the prerequisite for, you know, for being an author or being a successful author is having an interest in what it is you are actually creating itself.
Yeah, I don't think you could. I agree with you. I don't think you could be an author and put in all the time to make a book if you don't really believe in books, you know.
Yeah, it's also like learning the craft also because, like, and then once you start, I mean, I noticed this in my own reading, but once you start writing, you start, you know, almost like reading books a little bit differently. Like, oh, this is interesting. How they're setting something up, for example, and or how they, you know, how they might sort of, you know, play out a big plot twist or something like that. I find myself, you know, like trying to learn not just about the story, but actually about sort of the author's approach to telling the story.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes I try to turn that part of my brain off so that I can enjoy the book. Because if I get too into the how did they do this, how did they phrase this, how did they structure it, it sometimes makes the reading experience not as much fun.
That's true, right? It almost goes against like what you're, if you're trying to relax, you know, yeah. and entertain yourself, once you start diagnosing kind of what's going on, it feels a little bit more like work, doesn't it?
Yeah, agreed.
So I'm curious, I mean, as somebody who was, you know, had been writing short stories, sort of like in high school and then majored in English, what drew you into the medical profession?
Mm-hmm. I think partially it was my parents and my upbringing. You know, like, it was like, you need to be a professional. You need to do one of these careers, X, Y, or Z. And partially it was that I knew that it was a prescribed path, that if I took one step, I knew what this next step was. I was good at taking tests and all of those things. So I knew that if I did well in college, I'd get into medical school and, you know, then the next step and the next step. And I didn't feel, I needed a career path like that. That was more sort of, I knew how to get there. And then when I got there, and I do, as I said, I do like it and I still enjoy it. I felt like I needed something else to round out my life.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you learn about yourself in medical school and then in your practice as a doctor that might inform your writing and storytelling?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the world of medicine has so many stories, and as a physician, I'm allowed a peek inside people's lives that most others don't get. And so I see the heartbreak and the sadness and the challenges and everything that other people aren't allowed to a window into. So I think I naturally gravitated to writing about medicine because there's so many stories there. And also because medicine is so opaque to a lot of people. It's a mystery, and there's a hunger to know more about it, as witnessed by, you know, all these medical shows that people enjoy. And so I kind of knew that I could bring my knowledge of medicine to the world of reading.
I remember growing up reading. My grandfather was a doctor, and he, in his library at home, had just a bunch of books by Robin Cook. And I started reading them like when I was in high school. I'm like, oh my God, these books are amazing. Like, I just loved like the idea of the medical thriller.
Uh-huh.
And then I was able to interview a couple of years ago on this program, Tess Gerritsen, mm-hmm. who, you know, another sort of like yourself, sort of, you know, doctor turned author who had great success with you know, her standalone novels, but also the whole Rizzoli and Isles series. And you're right. I mean, there are so many stories coming out of medicine, and specifically, I'm wondering, you know, from you as a sort of a radiologist and you know, specializing in what you specialize in. I mean, I'm sure you have to deliver some life-changing news to people on a somewhat regular basis. And I'm curious about how, you know, if that was a way of for you of tapping into some empathy that you could bring into writing, or sort of just how that experience of breaking, you know, again, life-changing news to mm-hmm. to people impacts you as an author.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that definitely did play into my writing for sure, and just being with people at that moment of crisis and shock, and, you know, any number of emotions could play in at a moment when someone is told that they have cancer. And in my first book really centers a lot on that. And I drew from all of the experiences I've had sitting with patients during that time, and use that to inform my first book, Bedside Manners, which really centers on a breast cancer diagnosis. And that's what I do every day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I want to talk about Bedside Manners, because, You know, just kind of having read the background of it, I'm curious. I was curious to know, like, how your sort of role as a radiologist, you know, impacted that book. But it sounds like you were at the Westport Writers Workshop, which is a tremendous resource for anybody living in or around Fairfield County. They are fantastic. I've been to a few events up there. But so what was the sort of, how did you start that book? I mean, did you start that book after your time at the, you know, mm-hmm. taking that class and what was your approach to writing it and then getting it published?
Mm-hmm. But I just want to echo what you said about the Westport Writers Workshop, because I would never have made it through two novels without that wonderful resource. So actually, after that first class that I took, my instructor, you know, gave me the challenge to write a novel, and I accepted. And then I joined a manuscript class, which was like, you're writing a big project and you're really going to bring in pages every single week and take feedback and make it better and bring them back. And so I started one of those classes and had like four or five or six people in it. And then I continued in that same class for years. I finished my first book. I started in 2014 and I finished it in 2017. It was published in 2018. So I really depended on that class to help me get it done, because with a full-time job and, you know, all the things that I have going on and, you know, just finding it hard to get the words on the page, knowing that I had to bring in pages, made me sit in the chair and actually write.
Yeah, it's that being accountable to other people almost. Yes. I mean, you have to be accountable to yourself, but when you're bringing it and sharing and doing that kind of lights a fire under you a little bit. And as you were going through that process and you were getting feedback on your work and presumably giving feedback to other people as well, what was that like? I mean, in terms of sort of understanding criticism or taking criticism, was that hard? Was it hard at first, or what was it like?
It was hard at first, and especially in the manuscript classes really are, you know, very intense about making the book better and about like restructuring and you know, and even though people are usually very nice, there's a lot of constructive feedback. And for me, as someone who's always, you know, done well in the academic realm, you know, sometimes coming in and I'm like, oh, I got these great pages. And then I would hear all of these things like, well, the dialogue doesn't really work, or I'm not sure this character would really do that way, or whatever it might be, was really hard at first. And now I've kind of grown a thicker skin and I'm more used to it. And I know that it's going to make my book better. And so I go in knowing that I'm going to get lots of feedback and that's the way it is. And I'm going to take it and I'm going to revise and I'm going to revise again. And eventually I'll have a better book.
Yeah. I mean, and this, you know, I don't mean this to sound sort of insensitive, but I like to think of, you know, writing a book, publishing a book is almost like childbirth, because, you know, you've got to nurture it. Yeah. You know, you've got to take care of it. You've got to deal with some negative things at times,
right.
But there's pain involved in it as well. And some of that pain is, I mean, you know, people tell me, you know, you don't remember the pain. My wife remembers the pain, but we had triplets, so she definitely remembers the pain. Although actually the anesthesiologist might counter her remembering of the pain, because she was, I guess, pretty knocked out, but, I was there. She was knocked out. But really it's learning to take the criticism, I think is very hard for people, especially, you know, like you mentioned, sort of always having done well academically, and, you know, you could come into it by saying something like, oh God, how dare you not understand this dialogue, or how dare you not understand the intention I had when I was writing this. And that's right. The thing. It's like, well, we don't always know what the intention an author has is, but.
Right. And you can have whatever intention you want, but if it doesn't come across on the page, then it's not working.
Right. And there's really no way to know that until you pass it by somebody else, and specifically somebody who, you know, has no stake in the game of your success, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So Bedside Manners came out in 2018, And it won some awards. So tell me what that was like and how that felt.
It was great. I mean, it was I was very proud to release my debut novel and then to have other people read it and think that it had something to say and that it was meaningful was really wonderful. But the best part, I think, of releasing Bedside Manners was when the breast cancer survivors would come up to me and say that they read the book and that they really appreciated seeing their story on the page and that it resonated and that it felt true to life and that I captured the emotional experience. Because for me, that's like the highest praise. I haven't had breast cancer. No one in my family or close to me has had breast cancer, but I have obviously seen it a lot up close and personal in my day job. And to know that I really was able to somehow translate the experience into the story really meant a lot.
Yeah. So hearing from those survivors that, mm-hmm. you know, they felt like you did something that moved them.
Right.
And that felt true. So
and when better than any award.
Better than any award. Well, right. There you go. That's I can imagine that to be true. So let's talk about Better to Trust and sort of tell me a little bit about what this book is about. And I know it is being released tomorrow.
Yes.
Tell me about this story and how it came to you.
So I after I finished Bedside Manners, or after I decided to publish it and I wanted to write something new, I kind of was looking around for stories everywhere, just keeping my ears open. And an acquaintance of mine happened to tell me that that her brother was going to perform a minor operation on her husband. And it was like a very minor, like orthopedic thing, not a big deal. And everything went absolutely fine. It was not a big deal at all. But it just got my gears turning. I just started thinking like, okay, that's a little unusual. And I'm not sure about that. And then what if it wasn't a minor orthopedic operation, but it was a major operation? And the most major operation I could think of was brain surgery. And what could be better? What could be higher stakes than brain surgery? And then what if that brain surgery didn't go so well and there were some complications or secrets or something else that caused it to not really be successful? And that's how I got the idea for Better to Trust. It's about a neurosurgeon who's struggling with a prescription pill addiction, who makes the decision to operate on his sister-in-law's brain. And then it follows the neurosurgeon and his sister-in-law, both before and after the surgery, to see, you know, how the family deals with this decision and the emotional and physical fallout.
Wow. I mean, I love the fact that this came from like a real life situation.
Yeah.
You know, and I think so for many of us, who write and you know, either write for a living or write as, you know, part of our portfolio of activities we do to earn income, which I certainly fall under that category. But the fact that you could just be going about, and this is what I love about writing, the fact that you could be going about your day and just listening to just being aware of things around you, listening to stories, and then having that spark, that moment that, you know, just turns that into something else. And you play that what if. Well, what if, you know, what if this were a little bit bigger? What if this were different? And then you explore it. And I, you know, we were talking before about, you know, how it's important for authors to read. I think it's also very important for authors to be curious. It's like you need to have that curiosity gene, if there is such a thing. What's your take on the importance of curiosity when it comes to writing?
Yeah, I think so. I think an author needs to be curious and as you said, need to keep their ears open and listen to conversations. I love listening to conversations, especially like I used to write at the Barnes & Noble Cafe. That was like my favorite place to write, and since it's closed, unfortunately. But I would sit there and write and I would listen to the conversation at the next table and wonder what the relationship was between these people or what were they arguing about. And then the what if starts going again. Well, what if they were sisters, or what if they were, you know, and then it helped me create scenes and dialogue. And so, yeah, I think, yes, the authors need to be able to say what if and then go with it.
Yeah. Do you write from an outline by any chance?
I wish.
You wish.
I've tried. So I kind of do like a, I kind of do like a cross between plotting and pantsing. So I'm not completely like free for all, but I definitely don't write a whole outline.
Yeah.
So what I do is I come up with a story and I start writing it. And at that point, I don't know really where it's going. I just need to get to know the characters. And then once I get to know the characters a little bit and I have some sense of the trajectory they're on, then I outline usually like 3 or 4 or 5 chapters in advance of where I am. And I may at that point know where it's eventually going to end up, but I haven't outlined the whole thing. I think I feel like it like cages me in a little bit too much. Like I just need the characters to have a little bit more freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, I know there's different perspectives on that.
Yes, I wish I could just outline the whole book and then write it. It would be so much easier. But I've tried and it just doesn't feel right to me.
You know, honestly, most of the authors I talk to who really are proponents of writing from outlines will always add to it that, you know, while they do it, they don't really view it as handcuffs, you know, that they'll do it. And then they realize if the story takes a change and that happens as you kind of learn your characters more and as your own creativity kind of comes into play, it's okay to allow for those unforeseen left or right turns. But I'm always curious about, you know, people who have the ability to outline something, you know, before yeah. they start writing. I certainly try to. It doesn't always work, but so you are an avid reader. I'm curious, what are the stories or the themes that really stick with you most, or that you find yourself kind of gravitating towards?
So one thing that I definitely gravitate towards, and I don't think I'm ever going to change, is that I like to write my stories from multiple points of view. I love reading those stories too. And I think the reason is because it just gives me a more well-rounded view of the situation and the whole story. Like if I just told the story from one point of view, to me, that would be dull and it would be one-sided. And I like seeing a more like 360 view with multiple different angles on what's happened. So like that's what I did in Better to Trust. I have the neurosurgeon and then I have the patient, and then I also have the neurosurgeon's teenage daughter. And each of them has a voice, and each of them has a different view of the situation, of the same situation. I've just recently read several books that are like that, and I keep going back to books like that. Like I just read We Were the Brennans by Tracy Lang, which is a wonderful debut story. And it also novel, and it also is a family story, a dysfunctional family story, which I can't say no to those either, which is perhaps why I write about families as well. I keep coming back to families and multiple points of view.
Yeah. And Jonathan Tropper, I haven't read him in a while, but he did a great job with sort of dysfunctional family stories.
Yeah.
And they're just so beautifully written. So I'm curious, if you were to wind up on a desert island, and I'm not going to limit the number of books that you could take with you, but I'm going to limit the authors that you could take with you, right? The authors' books. Who are 3 or so authors you'd want to make sure that you definitely had in your backpack or in your suitcase or, you know, in your trunk, depending on how many books you're bringing.
Okay.
Who do you want to make sure that you have with you?
Okay. So there's a couple authors that are my must reads for like decades at this point. So Chris Bojalian is one of them. I'll read anything he writes, absolutely anything. And I love that he writes different genres. Like he writes thriller, he writes historical. I really am almost never disappointed with his books. So that's one. And then Jodi Picoult, I'm always going to pick up her books. I love how she just really gets into the emotion of the situation and draws the reader in from the first page. And then other more recent novelists that I always am going to pick up their books. One of them is Kimberly Martin. She's a doctor author as well. She's an ER doctor. Her third book is coming out in November. It's called Doctors and Friends. And so I'm always going to pick up her books. She's been very good to me as a mentor, really kind of guiding me, because her book came out, I think, maybe the year before, or the same year actually as my first book, but earlier in the year. So I've kind of been following in her footsteps a little bit, and she's been mentoring me along the way. So those are the ones that definitely come to mind.
Yeah. Good choices. So you'll have some good entertainment on that desert island.
Yes.
I would, whenever I ask that question, my mind always goes to like Gilligan's Island for some reason. I know I'm showing my age when I say things like that. But, what about like stories that you feel like you still have left to tell? I mean, you're you know, two books into your writing career. Actually, yeah. But before I ask that, like, I mean, do you anticipate a time, and feel free to say no comment, but when when, you know, your writing will sort of surpass the time you spend writing will surpass the time you spend in medical practice?
Well, if you have a connection with Oprah, then maybe, but otherwise, I
do have a connection with Oprah. So my good friend, Debbie Benovitz, who I worked with at Unilever for many years. She now runs like global research for Weight Watchers, or WW as they call it now. And she and Oprah are apparently very close. So I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, at this point, you know, my husband is a public school teacher. And so I really pay the mortgage and all of those things, you know, pay for college. So that means I'm going to be continuing in my day job, which is great. And then, you know, who knows, maybe down the road, I'll change the balance a little bit, you know, maybe work fewer days in radiology, more days in writing. But right now I'm sticking with the way it is and seeing how it all pans out.
Yeah, you know, I find it interesting, just having interviewed so many authors, you know, everyone, you know, from very big names to independently published people to people who are sort of still straddling the day job writing thing. And the past couple of people I've interviewed, I interviewed a guy named David Yoon, whose book Version Zero just came out this past summer. And he was talking, because his wife is also an author.
I love her books too, yeah.
Yeah, and he was just telling me about, you know, the moment when she felt comfortable. I guess she worked in finance, if my memory serves. But when she felt comfortable sort of quitting her job and writing full time. And then he did sort of the same thing. And obviously there's a lot of risk associated with that. But, you know, I think I'm kind of like you. It's like we're single income household here. I have three kids in college. And, you know, I don't see myself hanging up my sort of marketing consultancy anytime soon to write. I would love to, but you know, it's one of those practical.
But the funny thing is also, I'm not sure I would be successful doing it. You know, doing writing full time, because for me, some of the way I get things done is just by being busy. Like if I know I only have 1 or 2 hours to write, then I'll crank out some words in those 1 or 2 hours. But if I have a full day, I'm not sure if it would work that well.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. So it's almost like, you know, you can be as productive as you are because you have to be.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Versus if you have too much white space or free time, yes. Then, you know,
I actually have a physician author friend. She had a very successful book and she left her practice and she to write full time, and she really did have the problem I'm worried about. She sat there and looked at the blank screen for the full day.
Oh wow, that's interesting.
Yeah,
interesting. Well, as we kind of wrap up here, I'm curious about advice you would give your younger self. So if you could write a letter to your younger self, you know, to that younger person, and you could pick the age. I'm thinking. you know, you mentioned you felt at one point that you had to have, you know, your parents put a little bit of pressure on you and that you had to make a decision. But, you know, if you could write to yourself at any age some advice, you know, knowing what you know now, what would you tell, you know, the younger Heather?
Mm-hmm. My main thing I would say to myself is don't be afraid of imposter syndrome. You're not an imposter. You're a writer if you write words onto the page. And I think that a lot of times I feel or have felt like I'm not really an author, or like my first book was published by a hybrid press, so I'm not really a writer yet. And my second book is published by an indie press, so I'm not really there yet. Well, I'm there. I wrote two books and I'm writing more books, and, you know, I have to stop putting myself down.
You know, I think that's very important for a lot of independent authors to hear, because there is, and I think the stigma was probably worse 10 or 15 years ago than maybe it is now. But if you're writing, you know, something that you're proud of, and regardless of how it gets out there, and other people are reacting to it and showing their appreciation for what you've done, then, you know, you're not an imposter. You're doing it.
Right. I'm the real deal.
You're the real deal. You're the real deal. Well, speaking of the real deal, tell us about when. So this book is coming out tomorrow.
Yeah.
And do a little sales pitch. Where can people pick it up starting tomorrow?
So starting tomorrow, you can purchase the book anywhere books are sold: Amazon, Barnes and Noble, etc. Indie bookshops. There's going to be a launch party at the Westport Library tomorrow, Tuesday, 21st at 7 p.m. So people are welcome to join virtually or in person as well.
Very good. The Westport Library. I used to work in Westport and I used to go there on my lunch breaks every now and then.
It's beautiful. It's been redone the past couple of years.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, really. I haven't been up there in a while. I haven't really left Stamford that much. You know, I live in Stamford, right. But I haven't really left Stamford in a while since COVID. Although I tell you what, last night I did take a big chance. And as a physician, you might slap my hand. But a friend of mine invited me to a little rock and roll show in New York City last night. So I went to Irving Plaza and saw Tesla.
Oh, wow.
Not the car, but the 80s hair band. And fortunately, I wore earplugs because we were like right next to a speaker and I would have been deaf and I wouldn't have been able to hear a word you said this morning, Heather. But I did leave Connecticut yesterday to go to New York City.
It must have felt strange.
I was not comfortable. I'll be honest with you. We were all packed into this like club, and you know, in addition to my earplugs, I had my mask on because I was like, and nobody else did. So I don't know what. I am just, you know, saying a prayer that you know, nothing bad happened. But they were checking vaccination cards at the door. So
that's good.
You know, fingers crossed on that one.
Exactly.
Silly me, but. Heather, thank you so much for taking the time to join me here on Uncorking a Story. I wish you all the best with the launch of Better to Trust and your launch party tomorrow.
Thank you so much for having me.